In our first reading today from the prophet Jeremiah, we hear him speak about this idea of a covenant, a new covenant that will not be like the old covenant. What is he talking about here? Well, throughout history of Israel, God has chosen to come into relationship with his chosen people by means of covenants. Now, we might be more familiar with the idea of a contract. A contract is kind of a civil agreement between parties to exchange various goods or services. It's based around the kind of thing, well, I'll give you this if you give me that, or I'll do this for you if you pay me this, or do that for me. And it's designed to keep the parties equal and to compensate one another. It's very kind of legalistic. It's a contract. A covenant is maybe kind of based in the origin of a contract and a give and take, but a covenant is much deeper than a mere contract. Whereas in a contract you might exchange goods or services, a covenant is always an exchange of persons. It's always people that are given, a relationship that is brought about. In fact, a covenant often brings about a new kind of family relationship. We think particularly about the covenant of marriage that brings two families together as well as two people to create a new family. It's much bigger than simply an exchange of assets in marriage. It's a joining of lives. So it's interesting that Jeremiah calls our attention to this word covenant to refer to our relationship with God. Because you see, God throughout history at various points has chosen to enter a covenant with us. We think just the promise he made to Noah after they come out of the ark, I will never destroy the world again with a flood. Or famously with Moses or Abraham. Abraham was told, I'll make of you a great nation. Moses was given the Ten Commandments, this covenant with God by which we would be his people. I mean, that's the essence of covenant with God right there. I will be your God and you will be my people. And this is a special bond between God and his people, enough that we would even refer to Israel as the chosen people because they have this covenant. Now notice that God is in no way obligated to do this. On a merely contractual level, what could we possibly give God for him to give us anything? He's supreme. He owns everything. He made everything. If he stopped thinking about us for a minute, we would cease to exist. There's nothing we could compensate God for. So rather, this is not a contract at all, but a free exchange of God freely giving himself in love. And the only thing he asks in return from us is our love for him. Now, here's the thing. This intimate relationship that we're supposed to have with God, well, the question that always comes up that most gets in the way is, okay, if we're his special people and he's our God, why all the suffering? Why does so much go wrong if this all-powerful, all-knowing God can do something about it and he knows about it? Why doesn't he do it? Why doesn't he fix the suffering? Why do bad things happen to good people over and over? This is the great kind of stumbling block of the Christian life. Well, our second reading and our gospel today give us, I think, a little bit of insight. In the reading to the Hebrews, it talks about how Jesus, while he was in the flesh, offered prayers to God with loud cries and tears even. And in the gospel, we see him in the Garden of Gethsemane saying, I am greatly troubled now. This is in the other gospels what we refer to as the agony in the garden. He's troubled and sorrowful unto death. Jesus is suffering greatly. And yet it tells us in the letter to the Hebrews that he offered these prayers to the one he knew could save him from death. Think about that for a second. That means Jesus, who is the beloved Son of the Father. The Father loves no one more than the Son. But the two of them are one, Jesus tells us. They are so intimate with each other in a way we can't understand. Jesus is literally wailing and crying to his Father, saying, save me from this suffering. If it's your will, don't let me suffer. Well, I think that's a beautiful example of prayer then for all of us. Is your prayer that intimate with God that you too could cry out to God? When was the last time your prayer involved wailing and crying. You know, sometimes I like to be able to just come to the church when it's locked and I can go in by myself and just have it out with God sometimes. It's nice. I can just talk and yell, and sometimes maybe I want to sing because I'm happy. What's your prayer like? Are you able to follow the model of Jesus, or are we kind of say, well, I'll be reverent, so, you know, I'll just kind of hang back and more like a contract kind of relationship. I'll pray my prayers. Okay, I'll throw, you know, maybe 5 or 10 decades of the rosary at the Lord now, and I'll give him some Our Fathers, and then I'll pray some Hail Marys, and, you know, and we hope he's keeping track because we want to show up at heaven and, hey, God, it's me. Here's my tally sheet, and look at all the rosaries I prayed. Look at all the fasting I did, and so, you know, that's my end of the bargain. Now you keep up yours. It's just not it. That's a contract, and if we want to be judged on that kind of standard, there's not enough rosaries we could possibly pray. Rather, we're in a covenant with God. So the suffering then, we should expect that if Jesus suffered, then in the face of suffering, we should see, well, what did Jesus do? Well, we know he cried out to God. He cried. He let it all out there, and he didn't want to suffer. It's not like we should look at suffering and say, oh, good, suffering. I mean, some of the saints are able to say that, but for most of us, we shouldn't expect that we will like it. But notice what the letter to the Hebrews says. He offered it to the one he knew who could save him from death. Now, if we look at the situation, we would be tempted to say, well, it sure looks like the Father didn't answer his prayer then. If he prayed to the one who could save him from death, why didn't he? Why didn't the Father save Jesus? Or why didn't Jesus on the cross, as they taught him, come down from that cross if you're the Son of God? Well, why didn't he? It sure looks like God didn't answer that prayer. He prayed to the one who could save him from death, and he died. So what happened? Why was the prayer not answered? Well, I think it was. Listen again. He offered his cries to the one who could save him from death. It all very much depends then upon what your image of salvation looks like. Did God the Father save his beloved Son from death? Yes. Yes, he did. Now, he allowed him to suffer and die. That's true. But notice, death does not have the last word. Jesus really is raised from the dead and is more alive than he was even before he was crucified. So did the Father save him from death? Yes. He saved him precisely through the suffering, not going around it, not doing away with the suffering, but rather he took the suffering, transformed it, and made the cross the very image of life. That's why Jesus says, when I'm lifted up from the earth, I will draw everyone to myself. We talked about this last week. The cross becomes a sign of victory, not just empty suffering. So that's the secret. If we have this covenant relationship with God, then we know our suffering isn't meaningless either. God will save us from suffering the same way he saves Jesus. Not by taking it away, not by giving us a good answer to why do children get sick and die? Why do people get cancer? Why is there so much suffering? Why do marriages fall apart? Why is there betrayal? All good questions without an easy answer. And God doesn't say, okay, here, let me fix it. He says, no, I'm not going to take it away. You're going to go through the suffering and even die, but I will save you from suffering and death. In fact, I will take your suffering and transform it into a great victory. So how much is your prayer like Jesus then? I'm willing to bet all of us know suffering. We've all got that. Look at what Jesus did. He prayed. He prayed earnestly with all his heart to the one he knows loves him. And then he went through the suffering courageously and was rewarded, not for himself. He had everything he needed, but for us. Jesus died for us. So let that be your prayer. Pray through your suffering, whatever it is. Maybe for these last 2 weeks of Lent, don't focus so much on, oh, I'm going to give up more things and I'm going to eat less or something. It's all fine. Do that. But it's easy to just say, I'm not going to eat chocolate. It's harder to say, I'm going to be really honest with God. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to let him have it. I'm mad at God. Or I feel so sinful, I don't even know if I can approach God. And the words of the psalmist become ours. Lord, create a clean heart in me because I think our relationship is not good and it's my fault. I've been sinning. Don't look at your relationship with God as a contract. See it as a covenant, a privilege that you have to address God intimately as your Father. Speak to him then from your heart. Do what Jesus did, and you'll find that there won't be suffering taken away normally, but what you'll get is the one who can save you from death will not only save you, but give you eternal life. And that indeed is good news.